Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. As always, my name is Andy. This week is the 6th episode already of the show. The last few weeks, the last month and a half have been crazy, and the show is going from strength to strength. So again, thanks to everyone for the listens and support. It's been amazing. Really excited for you to hear this week's guest, MJ Benias, someone who has been much requested on Twitter. So again, thanks for sending in your questions and requests. Just before we get to the show, I just want to give you a quick reminder what's coming up in the next few weeks on the podcast. So today is the 10th of June, and I'm releasing the show with MJ Benias, which is a really fun listen. I hope you enjoy. This Friday on the 12th of June, I'm going to be speaking to Nick Pope for episode 7 of the show. That'll be released sometime over the weekend, if not Monday. Then on Saturday, I'm speaking to Thomas Winterton. He is the ranch superintendent of Skinwalker Ranch, talking about the Skinwalker Ranch documentary, his experience on the show, and also his experience in general with a pretty special place in Skinwalker Ranch. This weekend, I'm really excited for this. I'm looking forward to recording episode 2 of the Skinwalker Ranch Watch Along with the Zignal Dan. The feedback from episode 1 with Dan has been incredible. We're really, really glad to hear so many people enjoyed it. It was something different, a bit of a watch along. You can watch along with us at the same time or just listen to us talk about the show and share our thoughts and views and digress a little bit as well. That was a lot of fun. As I said, that is going to go this weekend and drop on Saturday. It will be a Patreon exclusive and early access for a couple of weeks. Then later in June, it will drop into the main feeds for everyone. All we ask is if you can spare anything just now, then please consider supporting the show on Patreon. Just search for That UFO Podcast. But really looking forward to recording more specials like that. However, what you're here for today is to hear MJ Benias. I'm going to hand over. Thanks, folks. Enjoy the show. Hi, folks. So coming back from that, we have our next guest on That UFO Podcast, guest number 5. He is an author, journalist and educator. He's written articles for Vice, 40 and Times, Popular Mechanics and many other... What would I say? Many other...
publications?
Yeah, and many other publications. Thanks, MJ. It is, of course, MJ Benias, someone that has been very popular on the UFO Twitter feeds of recent times, and someone a lot of you guys have requested I speak to. So, MJ, how are you?
Oh, I'm terrific. How are you?
I am very well. Thanks for sparing some time to speak to us. I know you've been a busy, busy guy, and I can see from your Twitter feed just recently you've been looking at a Close Encounters of the Third Kind scene that your daughter has created, which is very cool. So again, keeping it in the family.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't actually. She just naturally does it. I think she's channeling or downloading information from the hive mind or something. I don't know. It's not my influence, but
it's very cool. It's good to get them kind of involved young, that next generation kind of coming through of ufologists and people with an open mind. I think in the past we would have said conspiracy theorists, but given what we're going to talk about, it's always good to keep an open mind with these things and where we're going. So, MJ, you're someone that I started following 6-7 months ago on Twitter. Didn't really know
much about you beforehand, and then I just realized that in this world you're really involved. There's a lot of people tag you in various different articles asking for your opinion on things, and then you kind of see how involved you are. So what is your background and how did you get involved in the UFO subject?
Yeah, well, my day job, my background, I'm an educator, so I teach English and history full time, and then as a result of sort of my academic interests, I was really into at university. I'll back up. My background at university was in culture studies and critical theory, and in literature. So, looking at cultures and how they create knowledge and how cultures, create ideological systems and value systems, and then kind of, you know, expand outwards from there. So I was really big into studying subcultures. I was really into studying, like the gothic and punk rock scene in the early 2000s and stuff like that. So I was really into subcultures. I'm still into subcultures. And I decided that I needed a project. And with the help of some other people who I knew who are kind of involved in this world, the paranormal kind of UFO space, they pushed me to look at, you know, you should look at the UFO community and the paranormal kind of communities as a subcultural study, right? Don't look at UFOs from the sort of traditional nuts and bolts aspect, but look at it more from how the culture and the community around UFOs has developed and grown. So that's how I got into it. I began doing research. I began interviewing people. I began reading a lot of books, just like kind of everyone falls down the rabbit hole, right? You start to kind of meet the interesting players and you read them. I became a MUFON field investigator for a couple years. I did some sort of boots on the ground UFO investigation. And it just kind of fell into it. I eventually started writing a blog. The blog kind of spiraled into a book, which was released 2 years ago or a year ago now, 2 years ago, I can't remember. It's called The UFO People, A Curious Culture. I started writing for Vice, Popular Mechanics. I've written for 14 Times, Fate, lots of stuff. So I've kind of become deeply embedded in the UFO community, and it's become definitely a major aspect of my writing career, I suppose. And that's obviously spiraled into other worlds. I do a lot of work into looking at sort of UFO cults and UFO religions, as well as sort of conspiracy theories and conspiracy narratives, I suppose, that often kind of intermingle with the UFO narrative. So that's kind of where my area of expertise is right now anyway. Long answer to your very short question.
No, listen, long answers are good. Otherwise, these podcasts can go very, very quickly. So it would be a bonus episode. But no, that's amazing. So you've kind of got involved through like an educational background and looking for a project. Did you have any interest before that, you know, growing up as a kid? Or was it something that you came into later?
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I was a nerd. So I was really into science fiction, fantasy. You know, I grew up watching, you know, Star Trek and Outer Limits and Twilight Zone and X-Files and all that stuff. So for me, it was always, you know, aliens were always a part of it in the sense that I always was afraid of them. I always had this anxiety about these creatures that could come into your home and take you away. And it's natural, I think, for most kids, right? You know, you look at across cultures over millennia, there's always the tale of the monster that will take the child from its bed and make it disappear, right? We see this sort of since the beginning. And aliens kind of fit into that narrative, right? They've always had that, they've always kind of had that idea behind them, the abduction and all that. So, and I grew up in the 90s, mid-90s, so for me, I was right in the thick of sort of the Black Triangle, alien abduction, kind of all of that. So I have always been interested, I suppose, but I've never had an experience. I've never had what I would say an authentic sort of paranormal experience. You know, I think maybe I heard a ghost once, but I'm not sure, and I'm not willing to chalk it up to a ghost, right? I'm just kind of, maybe it was a, so it didn't affect my life in any way. I'm more academically interested, and I think I'm interested on a human level more so than maybe the paranormal level.
Okay, so would you put yourself somewhere from a true believer in the subject on one end, and then on the other end you've got God, I mentioned him recently as well. You know, like a Mick West, who is really keen on debunking everything. Would you put yourself comfortably in the middle of that, where you've got an objective look at the subject?
Yeah, I'd like to say I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm a bit of a centrist. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people from all walks of life, from, you know, normal everyday people like myself, you know, farmers fall on that list somewhere, to, you know, billionaire executives, to people within the intelligence community, to academics, to a guy who works at McDonald's. And they all have told me sort of really compelling stories, and they have no reason to make them up. They have no reason to lie. They have no reason to hoax. There's nothing really in their backgrounds that would show that they're akin to delusion. So on the one side, I sort of believe them, right? I believe their experience and what they're telling me, I believe sort of happened to them, at least in some way. I'm not going to go down the road that it's aliens, or I'm not going to go down the road that it's interdimensional beings or time traveling humans or whatever. I can't, because that's all speculative at this point. But I believe that whatever they encountered was real enough to them that it sort of changed their life. On the other hand, you know, I don't want to be so open-minded that my brain falls out. I think we do need a healthy dose of skepticism and criticism within this world, because there are a lot of people who are, you know, potentially delusional, or they're here as to con us, or they're charlatans. There's also just a lot of naivete. You know, you need to kind of walk, I think, a fine line. You know, I really respect the hardcore debunkers and skeptics, and I really respect the hardcore believers and zealots as well. It's just you have to kind of, I think, walk a middle path a little bit with the UFO narrative, for sure.
Yeah, and personally, I think there's enough interesting material out there without having to make up, you know, either way. That, and again, it was something you said that was quite interesting in one of your, I think it was actually in your All the Strange Virtual Expo chat. It was media and culture generate the UFO reality, which is what you're saying there, that through generations and going back through the years, it's similar to religion. The bear, when you talk about having a god, that all religions have a variation of the same thing, and then you go back even further and further and further, and you have this one sun god that started it all off. And again, I suppose in the way you kind of seem to talk about it is that, yes, you've got, depending on technologies at the time, you've got your flying saucers, which are basically, you know, a spinning plate in the air. And even some of the photos of these things that are claimed to be legitimate, they look like kids' play toys, like spinning dreidels from the 40s and 50s. And as we get further and further and more advanced, they've got all these techno LED lights on them, and, you know, things are flashing in and out. So it's changed with our times. And as you say, you've got to kind of sit in the middle there, don't you? Otherwise, you're really planting your foot on either side of the fence.
Yeah, I think UFOs, and I think, you know, a lot of times paranormal phenomena in general, but you know, I'll stick to UFOs. They tend to follow our culture, right? They tend to manifest in ways that mimic or mirror our current technological, sociological, cultural ideologies and frameworks. You know, I mentioned in All the Strange video, you know, in the 21st century, you know, in 2020, it's laughable to argue, for example, that flying saucers come from Venus, and there's a whole collective of space brothers who live on Venus, and they have some sort of intergalactic federation, and they, you know, are monitoring humanity, and they haven't made contact yet because of what, I mean, they literally just, like, you know, stealing the entire script of Star Trek. You know, it's laughable because we know enough about Venus to pretty much confirm, yeah, listen, there's most likely no giant alien civilization on Venus. We would find this sort of laughable. But in the 1950s, when we knew very little about the planet Venus, it sort of made sense, right? It was, you know, we believed to be relatively habitable. Something could set up there if it needed to. You know, people were claiming that men from Venus were visiting them, and they, you know, looked strangely human and white. So, you know, there was this, again, it's kind of this mimicry of culture, and what was feasible then. Today, when you engage with people who are, I would say, are believers within the UFO community, you know, a lot of their work stems and circles around ideas within quantum mechanics and quantum physics. They deal with a lot of stuff in regards to artificial intelligence. Consciousness seems to be sort of also rooted in this, the idea of sort of an information download from consciousness itself. So again, you have the narratives of ufology spinning around the emerging science of today. We know very little about quantum mechanics. We know very little about quantum theory. In fact, most quantum theorists sort of say, if you think you understand it, you don't. You clearly don't. Like you're actually far behind. It's very spooky and mysterious, but it's a perfect kind of place for the mystery of UFOs to dwell, right? So we see this kind of manipulation of the UFO by our cultural and ideological structures, by our media, by where we sort of dwell scientifically and technologically. So, it's interesting because I think what occurs then is people kind of go down the road of, well, then you don't think UFOs are real, right? If you think UFOs just stem out of culture, you must be saying they're not real. And it's like, I'm not saying they're not real. I just think that somehow UFOs come from that place. Like they're somehow manifesting out of that void in our understanding, always just a little out of reach. I think that that's sort of part of the equation here. At least that's my current opinion. But, you know, that's kind of the best I got at this point.
And I like that, though. Current opinion shows you're at least open to that being fluid and changing as you kind of get more. And that's the way I kind of approach this as well. And you are right. And again, when you see some of the descriptions of visitations, encounters, abductions from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and you hear about these little men came out with a really cheap, old-sounding spacesuit that you would have dressed your kids up in Halloween, and they had a little glass helmet because they couldn't breathe our atmosphere. And it's like, yeah. And then it will have evolved now to what's a kind of, again, still quite humanoid looking, tall, and we've got the grey aliens, we've got the tall aliens, and then we've got the Nordics description of, the ones that are walking amongst us. And again, a Bob Bigelow, a guy who I won't mind discussing later on, has said himself, yep, these aliens walk amongst us, they visit us, they're here, and doesn't care what people think about that. But there's still no evidence to back up that claim, as credible as someone like that might be. And what has he got to lose making that claim? There's still a lack of evidence. And the whole topic, either way, you can't say there's nothing, because there's definitely something to it. But on the extreme, people who are claiming that, and something that is a very small personal pet hate of mine, and any listeners who have this, I apologize, right? But when people post for fact on Twitter, oh yeah, that craft is this particular government secret project.
Sure.
It's like, how do you know that? Or this particular craft is one that I viewed, and again, these aliens come from this star system and this, and it's like, again, maybe they do, right? But how do you know that? And it's that loses that objectivity and the kind of shape of the argument there. And I think that's a lot of what you're kind of saying amongst your writing, is that right?
Yeah, I just want to kind of point out two things. First of all, Twitter should never be a location that you should go to for like information, right? I mean, listen, Twitter's great, and then I love being on Twitter, and I love the social aspects of Twitter. But listen, you know, you can't fact check what a lot of people say on Twitter. So I would just sort of say, listen, take it with a grain of salt. Take it as entertainment, right? Claims made on Twitter should come with that little star at the bottom of a website that says, you know, this is for entertainment purposes only, right? You should always kind of, when reading Twitter, that should be part of it, until you can like backlink to a legitimate source of information. So that's one. The second thing is, you know, credibility is a funny thing. I think just because somebody has, you know, a lot of money, or they run a very successful business empire, or they have a PhD, or they work for the government or whatever, you know, that doesn't mean that they can't suffer from, you know, delusion or other sort of aspects of being human, right? Billionaires can make mistakes, suffer from mental illness or delusion. I'm not saying Mr. Bigelow does or anything. I'm just sort of in general, right? Mr. Bigelow, as well as others, are mortal, just like the rest of us. We all can suffer from moments of delusion. We all can have moments of confused thinking. We all make mistakes. So I just want to be really cautious. I think we give a lot of credit to, you know, this idea of a person being credible. And I think that can serve you to a point. Sorry, there's a cat here. Get out of here. That can serve you to
I've heard about the cat.
It's unbelievable how big it is. And he was the runt of the litter. Credibility is a dangerous thing. That's all I'm trying to say. And we just need to be cautious, I think, when we bow down before the altar of certain men and women and say, well, you know, this person's clearly credible because they have a PhD or they run a multi-billion-dollar empire or whatever. It's like, yeah, listen, they're human just like you and I are, and they will suffer from the exact same problems you and I can suffer from. You know, as Shakespeare kind of famously put, I think in Hamlet, right? Kings and peasants get eaten by maggots just the same. So, you know, we need to kind of, that's paraphrasing Shakespeare. But, you know, we just need to be cautious, I think. So again, I'm leery when somebody says, well, you should listen to this person because they have incredible credibility. I'm like, okay, but they're making claims that aren't very credible. So we need to figure out why that is, right? So when Mr. Bigelow claims, for example, that aliens walk among us, where is he getting that information from, right? What's the credible source of that data? And what's the credible source behind that data, right? So who told the guy, who told the guy, who told the guy? And where does this all stem from, right? And unfortunately, that's kind of where all the secrets are, right? And nobody wants to share, unfortunately.
And therein lies the problem. So for you, that's an interesting point of view, and I totally appreciate that. So regarding credibility for you, what makes someone credible, particularly in this field where everything is incredible? What makes someone credible?
Sure. You know, again, as a journalist, right? Credibility becomes really sticky because you either believe them or you don't a lot of times, right? Most credible people in the journalism world will present evidence to back up their claim, right? So if someone is truly credible, they will provide information that proves what they're saying is true. So, you know, we take Edward Snowden, for example. If Edward Snowden walked out in the public and said, the government is spying on you, but I have no proof to back it up, apart from the fact that I used to work for the Pentagon, I used to work for the CIA, I'm a contractor. If he just came out and said it, his story would have gone nowhere, right? It would never have been picked up by anybody. Nobody would know who Edward Snowden is. No one would care. The fact that he walked out of, out of his place of work with a USB stick with that evidence on it saying, yep, here's the program they're using and here's all the data. Well, now suddenly Edward Snowden is a credible witness and a credible contact and a credible source for one of the biggest stories of the 21st century. So I think that's sort of part of the game, right? There's a lot of people within the UFO world who say, I'm a credible source. I know the CIA is doing this, or I used to work for the NSA, or I used to be XYZ, but they don't provide any evidence to support their claim. This is why nobody listens to them, because they have no evidence. Credibility is not enough, right? You need to provide the data that backs up the claim itself. So when you ask me who is credible and who isn't, do they have evidence to support their claim of what they're saying is true? That's a sign of credibility. You know, after that, who they used to work for, where they used to work, who they currently work for, it's not really enough, especially if they're making at times, you know, somewhat outlandish claims that have yet to be proven in any sort of legitimate or authentic sense. So, this is why I have to be sort of cautious, because I know the UFO community hangs a lot of its hats on the credibility of witnesses. Right. This witness is credible. Therefore, this should be considered evidence on its own. Unfortunately, it's not. Right. That's not how it works in real life. Right. You know, I don't want to walk into a hospital and the doctor say to me, oh, yeah. Listen, I'm a doctor. And if I want to ask for where they like, OK, well, show me your, you know, your MD certificate. So I know you actually are a doctor. And they say, hey, you know, I can't find it. It's somewhere. You know what? I'm a doctor. I promise. I'm going to probably find another doctor. We ought to do kind of the same thing, I think, in the UFO world, right? Just because somebody has a story doesn't mean it's necessarily true. Just because somebody has a story doesn't mean they have evidence to back it up. I think we need to be really cautious with how we deal with the stories people tell and whether they're true stories or not.
So when you one name that springs to mind just with the description you've given there would be someone like a Bob Lazar, who I find Bob Lazar's documentary really interesting, right. If albeit a bit overly artistic at times. But the story itself, there's some elements to it I look at and go, yeah, but why doesn't that add up? Or surely that would be easily proven, and it's just not there. But then there's a lot to it that seems relatively, again, I'm going to use that word, credible, or, you know, potentially true. Is that someone you've kind of got in mind that you think people are hanging their hats on in that sense?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure who actually hangs their hat on Bob Lazar's story. You know, at the risk of sound...
Jeremy Corbell probably did.
Yeah, you know, and again, I don't want to... I have thrown enough shade. I'm done fighting this war. Listen, I don't think Bob Lazar is a credible individual. I don't think his story is true. I think it's completely fabricated. You know, that's my personal position at this time. If Bob Lazar suddenly presents evidence of his claims, you know, well, then I will obviously apologize and change my story, right? If he comes out and says, actually, here's the bottle of element 115 I stole, and, you know, it goes through proper scientific assessment and testing and turns out, yeah, it's not manufactured here and it's made by aliens and whatever. Obviously, you know, we can then say he's a credible individual. But Bob Lazar's last 30 years or so of existence have really dwelled purely in the mythological realm. I did it. You don't have to believe me if you don't want to. But you're always going to find people who do believe, right? Again, there's a lot of naivete out there. Bob Lazar's story has kind of been thoroughly debunked by a lot of people. No one can find records of his academic education. No one can find anybody who really worked with him, save, you know, one or two individuals who, again, maybe kind of remembered him a little bit. There's been sort of relative silence from, you know, his family and ex-wife in regards to this situation. They're not really coming out to back up his story, except his mom. You know, so I'm really hesitant because I'm not sure if Bob Lazar is really worth the discussion, because there's no aspect of credibility there really that I would say even makes him remotely credible. I mean, as far as I know, he doesn't really have any academic training really in his field, because we can't really show that he went to MIT or wherever he claims to have gone. So, and again, if he was a real whistleblower, he would come out with it, right? He would, well, here's my diploma, or here's my degree from MIT. Here's all of my information. And there's also a lot of weird stuff in his financial dealings and his other employment that he's had in regards to running a brothel. You know, he has a history of sort of illicit behavior. You know, he, for example, set up cameras in said brothel, recorded individuals using the brothel, and then was going to blackmail them with the video footage. I mean, this shows someone who kind of has a predisposition to unethical behavior, let's put it that way. So I'm not sure if we would even say he's credible at all, because he has literally some sort of criminal record. So yeah, anyway, that's my two cents on Bob Lazar. But I'm gonna get a lot of hate mail.
No, and do you know what, but again, in this subject, if you've not got the right opinion as many other people, then you do get that kind of attack as well. So it's a really interesting, again, take on that, and I do appreciate that. So you've got a case here that's pretty well documented. Again, it's got its flaws, and you've kind of broken it down really objectively there. So for you, what would be on the other side? Is there a particular case or incident or situation that you could look at and go, if you had to do a presentation and show back to someone that this is where I think there is something to UAP, sure, UFOs, that you would say this is the best we've got? We don't have the smoking gun. We know that in the field there is no concrete evidence. But what would you say is the best that we've got?
Well, you know, I think rightly so, you know, the Nimitz case is fairly compelling. I think anything coming out of the military, right, is going to be a fairly compelling piece of evidence, because, you know, with the Nimitz case, you have the video footage, but you also have testimony from pilots who were there. So you also have a lot of individuals who used to work in the intelligence world coming forward and saying, yeah, this stuff's authentic. And you know, being able to prove they worked there, right? So it takes someone like Chris Mellon or Luis Elizondo. They're not saying, oh, you know, oh, my files and records are missing, or they were burnt in a fire or something, right? Like, they can literally provide all of the information to kind of say, yeah, listen, this is what I did for a living. I know there's been some concerns over, you know, Mr. Elizondo's, background, but, unfortunately, you know, those concerns are moot. You know, there's been enough evidence presented now, at least to me, that proves Mr. Elizondo did work on the program he says to have worked on. So I have no doubts in my mind that, an individual like Luis Elizondo or an individual like Chris Mellon, did do what they say they did. So I think that there's something to be said for that. That doesn't necessarily prove, and I think we need to be really, again, careful here, it doesn't necessarily prove that aliens are visiting us. It doesn't necessarily prove that there is some intelligence that's not us coming to Earth, engaging with us in some special way. It proves that, if anything, the military and the government and the authority designed to keep us safe and monitor the skies, monitor the sea, is not able to necessarily track everything that's happening and is unable at times to deal with incursions violating airspace. So again, I want to be really cautious here. What we have evidence of in the case of the Nimitz and in the other two videos from the Roosevelt, the Gimbal and the GoFast, is not evidence of aliens, and it's not evidence of interdimensional beings or anything paranormal. It's evidence of an incursion being made where the authorities whose job it is to prevent incursions couldn't. So the big question becomes, what was it then, right? This is where speculation runs amok, and this is where UFO Twitter goes crazy, right? Well, it did this, therefore it must be X. It's like, well, that's not how evidence works. But, we can engage with speculation later. I think at first we need to figure out more about kind of the human side of this. You know, who's running the program? You know, who's still running it today? Where is it acting out of? How can we get more information about it? How can we get more evidence out? So this is sort of the job of myself, other journalists like Tim McMillan, who potentially can engage some of these higher levels to kind of sussing out information. The problem is it's slow going. It's not like you email the Pentagon and suddenly they're like, oh, you got us red-handed, here's all of our stuff, right? It doesn't really work like that. There's a lot of, well, contact this person or don't talk to this person, or we'll keep you posted. Like, it's the Yankee around a bit. So you have to work your way through other channels. And Nimitz, that to answer your question, the Nimitz case and ATIP is an interesting situation.
No, awesome. So it sounds to me like from your description there, Alu Elizondo is someone that you can look at and explore further, because like you say, he has never once, and this is what I love about TTSA, and I love Tom DeLong, but I'm going to remove him from this conversation for a second, where a Chris Mellon, a Hal Putov, Alu Elizondo has never gone on Glenn Beck or Fox or CNN or whatever network and said it's aliens. They always make a point of going for the national security aspect of these things are coming into our skies, whether they are ours, whether they are Russian, Chinese, or whoever, and they are performing maneuvers we find quite incredible, generational leaps ahead, beyond leaps, beyond leaps, beyond leaps, and we don't know what they are. So that's where someone like you can get on board with that conversation, because you can take that at face value and say, yep, this guy is who he says he is, and you like the way he thinks.
Sure. We need to sort of pull back here. I mean, you know, yes. We need to be cautious, though, because even though Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, and the rest of the contractors and crew at TTSA do say, you know, are who they say they are, right? That's been thoroughly documented. We're not questioning their background. Just because that's the case, though, you know, they are still susceptible to the same issues the rest of us are, right? They're still susceptible to very human problems that can potentially manifest in ways that would, you know, perhaps seem like, let's say, an encounter with, an alien entity or whatever. So what I'm trying to get at is they can still be believers, right? They can still have a vested interest in finding validation for their personal beliefs in regards to interdimensional beings or ultra-terrestrials or extraterrestrials or whatever. So, I love Lou. He and I speak fairly frequently. I would consider him a friend because, you know, we often talk about our kids. We talk actually very little about UFOs most of the time. So I love the guy, but you know, is it possible that, you know, he's a believer in aliens or something? Of course it is. It's everyone can be a possible believer. I'm Catholic. So I believe that a dead Jewish guy came back to life 3 days after they nailed him to a piece of wood. So, you know, we all have sort of paranormal beliefs or we're all susceptible to that. Does that then make me more friendly, let's say, to a Catholic worldview? Sure. Of course it does, because it's part of my worldview. Elizondo or Mellon or Putoff or Jim Semivan or Steve Justice or whatever, they might have beliefs that lead them to certain predisposed ideologies. That being said, in their defense, in the defense of Mellon and Lou and the rest of the guys and gals, you know, they are very careful in the way they word things. And I'll agree with you there. They don't walk around saying it's aliens and we're going to be invaded. Like, they don't do that, which is, I respect that, right? They maintain that healthy dose of skepticism and critical thinking that they say, listen, it could be aliens, but it could be a lot of other things too. And we just need to be cautious before we start speculating and going crazy and creating our own sort of mythological constructs within ufology and UFO and UAP discourse. So there's a lot of caveats there. And I think all I'm really trying to point out is that people, regardless of their position, who they are, where they're from, what the paperwork behind them says, are very complicated, right? Humans are complicated creatures, and we have a lot of beliefs and values and ideas that lead us down different paths. There's no such thing as total objectivity. We try to be objective, but we just can't be. It's impossible. So I want to kind of caveat that when I look at people, I don't see sort of this black or white, they're here or they're here. People are really strange. And have a whole array of experiences and ideas. And it, I think, predisposes us to believe certain things or not believe certain things or be critical or more active in our imagination towards, you know, different constructs and realities we build for ourselves. Okay, I think I'm done now.
Again, it's a great answer, okay? I'm trying to think how I ask someone that I'm getting to grips with your views and the way you're thinking, which I totally appreciate, how to ask this question that you give me an answer. An instant then, you said Nimitz and Princeton incident. What would you like that to be? So they're at the end of the day, whether it's, it was US government technology, we've realized how we can defy the laws of physics, or it's Russian, or what would you like it to be, if I can word it that way?
What are you asking me, what I think it is or what I want it to be?
Well, if you would tell me what you think it is, I would absolutely take that as an answer.
I don't know. That's so funny. I can't tell you what it is because I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I think, you know, we might have. Yeah, listen, the data's still out. If I had to go straight by pure just Occam's razor here, right? Just let's throw out what people saw. Let's throw out people's claims. Let's throw out witness testimony. Let's throw out all that, right? You know, we're probably dealing with some prosaic drone or some sort of test aircraft or whatever. But once you start adding in the layers of other ideas that are present or the other piece of evidence that are present, right? So the video alone is not enough. You know, we have witness testimony. We have testimony from radar operators who are on the Nimitz or on the Princeton rather. We have all of this other content, and it's irresponsible to ignore it. Just because you can't prove someone's story, if there's sort of a whole swack of evidence around it that kind of makes that testimony compelling, you can't ignore it because it's definitely part of the equation. You know, all of a sudden we're dealing with a drone that is doing things that, you know, are not possible. And we're dealing with test aircraft that are violating the basic laws of physics, or we're dealing with, vehicles that can spoof radar, the most advanced radar on the planet, so effectively that, it it's making it seem like there's multiple radar tracks, even though these things are designed to not get spoofed.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
You know, suddenly it becomes a lot less possible that it is a drone, or it becomes a lot less possible that it's a test aircraft from a foreign power. So am I saying that is it possible that it's otherworldly? Of course it's possible. Is it otherworldly? I don't know. I don't think there's enough information to make that guess. You know, I've heard rumors, there's other videos of other other vehicles. I've heard rumors that the you know, Pentagon has other sort of tidbits of data, and they're not sharing, and maybe rightly so, for national security reasons, I don't know. But, you know, based upon those rumors, I can't do much with it. But again, if those rumors turn out to be true, then the things I've heard are truly spellbinding and mystical. And I'm kind of at this point in my life now where I've done this long enough to realize that either whatever was behind the Nimitz and the Roosevelt incidents is either real, which scares the hell out of me, because clearly the people who are supposed to be protecting me can't, or the people in charge of intelligence gathering and intelligence and counterintelligence in the United States of America are completely delusional. And they're making stuff up, and that scares the hell out of me too, because the people responsible for the nation's like most important and dangerous special access programs, weapons, the nuclear bombs themselves, right, are believing in aliens and demons and the second coming of Christ and in a very kind of literal, real way, that there's like a war going to be waged. Like it scares the hell out of me as well, right? And these are like two evils I don't necessarily want to deal with. I don't know, right? And to answer your question, I do not know what is responsible behind it. I really hope it's a mistake sometimes, and it's like a drone or something, because then it's not so scary. But it's really odd. The more you talk to people who might know some things, you realize like nobody has a grip on anything, and that is more frightening than having a grip on it, which I think is maybe from a cultural level why the UFO community is really, really invested in speculation. It's a lot easier to deal with something when you understand what it is. So if I can say it's aliens, or I can say it's interdimensional beings or ultra-terrestrials or whatever, if I can give it a name, suddenly I have power over it, right? That's kind of what they say about demons, right? In the Bible, right? In the Judeo-Christian tradition, if you can name the demon, and you know its name, you have power over it. I think that we sort of see this within ufology, right? If we can establish a speculative place of where something's from, right? If I can identify it as alien, suddenly, you know, I can control it in some way. There will be a point maybe one day where humanity will be able to kill it if we have to. But when you're facing with a truly unknown, right, you have no idea what it is, you're powerless against it. And you start to really question your place in the universe, can you, is the world around you the reality that is the world around you stable enough to call it reality, or is it sort of this wibbly wobbly round thing with bits floating in the middle and reality's all wonky? This is unnerving for people, and this is unfortunately the world you get dragged into when you kind of walk into the UFO deep narrative spaces of your brain. Sorry.
Yeah. Listen, six months ago, I would have been very hesitant to say that, you know, next month there's going to be a fake alien invasion, but what I've seen in the last 6 months, I didn't think I would see in a lifetime, to be fair, worldwide. So I would not leave anything off the table at the minute. It's, thank God we've got stable world leaders in place that wouldn't do anything silly like that. So
joke.
Yeah, that isn't it just. Circling back, because you did mention again about the UFO community, and I do want to kind of touch on your book. So the book you mentioned before was The UFO People, A Curious Culture. Do you consider yourself one of the UFO people now?
I've become, I think, an honorary member of it. Yeah, let's put it that way. I consider myself a member of the UFO community and a UFO person. I think, yes, I do. Because in writing about it, I've come to love it. And for all of its beauty and for all of its faults, you know, no group is perfect. You know, no group is going to be awesome all the time. So I think there's aspects of the UFO community that I really appreciate. You know, most namely that, my interest in UFOs has led me to meet a lot of interesting people. People who in any other, you know, area of let's say study, I never would meet. You know, I've met the world's leading experts in a lot of different fields. I've got to, you know, ride in a helicopter with a, you know, multimillionaire. I've gone places and been with people who are unique and fascinating. And their level of engagement with UFOs varies, but they're all kind of drawn to the mystery that is the paranormal or the UFO, right? It has become sort of their search for themselves in a sense, right? You know, the search for God is kind of the quintessential way of looking at it. But they're really just trying to figure out their place in all of this. And the nice thing about UFOs is it provides a great bridge for that, right? It provides a great way for me to be able to engage with some of these individuals through a mutual interest and then, you know, be friends with them and engage them and, you know, hang out with them and, you know, go for dinner with them or drink beer with them. So I would say that that's the part I love. Right. Meeting a lot of interesting, unique people who have very interesting ways of looking at the world around them. You know, the other side is dealing with the more dangerous aspects. Right. The stuff that stems out of the insanity of it all. You know, I had the luxury for the last 8 months to literally follow a UFO cult around. I shouldn't call it a cult. I redact that statement. A UFO spiritual belief system. I don't know. My lawyers will figure it out. But you know, so again, and it leads you down some dark places, right? It leads you down a path of individuals using UFOs and the paranormal to cause harm, right? They sell snake oil. They sell conspiracy. They sell active disinformation for the purposes of like weakening established systems, whether it's in academia or democracy, in order to profit from it. Whether they do it because they believe it or whether they do it because they are charlatans and con men, you know, that's yet to be seen. But the other side of all this is the fact that it's also dominated by a cast of actors who are engaged in like nefarity. And unfortunately, some people within the UFO community are so zealous in their belief that they're willing to buy it because perhaps their search for vindication and for God is much more desperate than some of the rest of us. So I think that's what the book generally deals with, right? It deals with this wide array of people who chase this phenomenon in a lot of different ways. And the subculture is filled with people who are amazing, wonderful, interesting, unique, and they have a lot to add to society and the world around them. And it's also filled with individuals who I consider to be extremely dangerous, who care little for the words that they say and the words they choose to use and the messages they create and the real effects it has on people's lives, to the point where people have committed suicide or killed one another as a result. So there's, you know, it's a fickle mistress, being a member of the UFO community. And you're not really sure always who's playing for whose team, and it takes a lot of time to suss out where a person stands in regards to that, I guess.
Yeah, very, very good point. Someone like myself, I want to know what it is, and whatever that may be, I naturally have a curiosity for anything of, okay, now what next? If it is aliens from another planet that have managed to come here and visit, then great. You know, what's it like? Why did you do that? You know, what else do you know that we don't? If it's different realities, interdimensional, ultra-terrestrial, then again, equally fascinating. Okay, where do we go from here? How does that affect us? I think there are, again, a group of people that you have mentioned to make a lot of money, selling apps, selling books, selling their side of the story, that their worst fear would be we do find out what this is, because then we have an answer, or at least that, do you know what you're peddling isn't correct, it isn't true, it never has been true, and they get found out. And yeah, that those people can be pretty serious, and it's a shame that some of these people get their own documentaries, get their own TV shows, and get to have the platforms they do, because you can absolutely aim at a section of the UFO community that, if you want to class it as vulnerable, is definitely there. And they definitely prey on that, which is unfortunate, but it's going to happen in any section of society, I think, is something that you're far more in a better place to talk about than I am anyway, given the subject that you've written on.
I think you're right. I think vulnerable is a great word. I think we all enter into stages of vulnerability at times in our lives, right? Everyone has experienced being so beat down that they're almost broken. And it really depends on who's around you to help you put those pieces back together. If you have a stable support system, a loving family, whatever, to help you rebuild after being knocked down, typically, you know, you have a healthy process to rebuild life. If that isn't in place, or there's issues with that, or there's obviously mental health concerns or whatever, suddenly what starts to fill that gap are individuals who are willing to tell you that you are special and you are unique and you are one of the chosen and you can be saved. And if you simply do this, if you simply click subscribe, if you simply buy this book, if you simply sign up to my class, if you simply join me on this convention floor, or you come to my meeting, suddenly, you know, you're finding your vindication, and you're rebuilding in someone who does not necessarily have your best interest in heart, but rather someone who has your money, you know, and wants your money, or you know, even worse, they're delusional. They want your soul, in a sense, right? They want to own you and have power over you. And this is how really religions and cults kind of begin, right? This desire for control. Part of it's financial, part of it is simply just the lust for power and wanting that. So I, you know, I caution people all the time that if somebody tells you that they know, or they claim to know, what the source is of paranormal or supernatural or ufological phenomena, they want something from you, right? We need to be cautious. So I think in the book I say, you know, if somebody tells you they know what UFOs are, they're either delusional or trying to sell you something. And I think that's a true statement. I think the vast majority of voices in the UFO community that are authentic and legitimate often will say, I have no idea what's going on, right? Like, I don't know. All I can tell you is the history, or I can provide you some cultural background or some scientific background into what's going on here, but that's it. I'm not going to tell you it's aliens, or I'm not going to tell you it's ultra-terrestrials or whatever, because we just don't know. I think those are kind of the more authentic, legitimate voices we need to listen to. Once people start making claims like, oh, for sure 100% it's alien, or for sure 100% it's interdimensional, or for sure 100% it's demonic, or for sure 100% it's, I don't know, ghosts of dead indigenous people or something, suddenly we need to be super cautious. Like, we kind of need to pull back a little bit, right? We need to kind of say, okay, well, hold on. Like, why are you saying that? And like, where are you getting this from? Because suddenly, you know, we need to be aware that, that they might be leading us down a path, that serves them and not necessarily, truth or fact or knowledge. So yeah, I agree. I think vulnerability plays a big point. I think UFOs attract vulnerable people at times, the same way sort of evangelical Christianity or any sort of other religious movement does, right? It finds people who are hurt and it provides them something to help them rebuild. And UFOs, I think, are just another sort of religious tool in the tool belt. Let's put it that way. Spiritual tool, maybe.
No, absolutely. So I would recommend your book, and it's one I'm going to get myself. So it's The UFO People, A Curious Culture. Can you give us a little bit of a state of the union? So given current events, recent events, the way this year's gone, we've had a couple of kind of crazy years in ufology where we've had the Nimitz cases come out, New York Times article, TTSA rise to prominence, had these videos, we're waiting on more, guys at Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon. As a community, where do you see ufology right now? How broken is it? Or how together is it?
I think ufology has always sort of been broken. I think that's why we love it so much, right? It's sort of been, it's always been this island of lost toys and broken toys, right? I don't want to say that ufology is broken or together, because I'm not sure if that's sort of a good way to look at it. I think rather what we're going to see and what we're going to potentially experience is a reshaping in how people engage with the question of UFOs. I think what's going to happen is you're going to start to see more serious reporting on the subject. I think you're going to see the creation of legitimate reporting on the UFO phenomenon that deals more with the evidence and maybe the cultural aspects and the scientific aspects, and less on the typical tabloid crap that exists right now. So I think that's going to be one. I think you're going to see more legitimization of the topic, because I think it's becoming a lot harder to hide things. Secondly, I think what we're going to see is more information coming out in regards to what governments are currently doing in regards to exploring or engaging with UAP. I'm not saying that it's going to be disclosure of alien contact or anything. I think that's nonsense. I think rather what we're going to see is that governments are fundamentally, they've always been fundamentally interested, but they're still engaged in UFOs. And we're going to start seeing more of that information start to come out, I think. The more political nature of ufology and UFO discourse or UAP discourse is gonna emerge over the next 365 days. So I think for me, that's kind of all I can say at this point. I think we're gonna see a shift in the narrative, and suddenly more people are gonna start talking about the subject in a more authentic way, in a more legitimate way. You know, there's always going to be the hucksters and the shysters and the guys who peddle alien mummies and all this stuff. That's always going to exist. But I think what you'll see is here's a good way of putting it. Okay. This is going to sound crass, and I apologize to anyone who this offends. But I think what's going to happen is you're going to have a split in conversation. I think what's going to happen is you're going to have a very real movement within good UFO discourse that's going to kind of say, you know, this is the table that we're talking at. And if somebody walks up and says, here's my dead alien mummy, we're going to say, listen, the kid's table's over there. Go sit somewhere else. You know, get the hell out of the room, right? Like, who let you in? I think what you're going to see is you're going to see this schism that's going to occur between the more pop UFO-tainment kind of stuff that's created and the more authentic exploration of what's actually going on in government, in politics, behind the scenes in regards to the UAP phenomenon. So I think that's what's going to happen. That rift is going to grow. I think it already exists, but it's going to grow significantly more. And I think certain people are going to get cut out of conversations and they're not going to like it because they peddle nonsense. And certain individuals who are engaged in researching this and looking at it and writing about it and talking to people who are involved in a more real sense are aware who peddles nonsense and who doesn't. And what's going to happen is a fundamental shift in discourse. I think that's what we're going to see within the next year or two. But I'm going to say a year. I'm going to predict State of the Union, Donald Trump, I'm going to build a wall, and that wall is going to divide the world. No, I'm just joking.
Keep out the aliens. Yeah.
Keep out the, no, yeah. 365 days. That's my claim anyway.
Sure. So on the podcast, myself and you'll know Dan, who is The Signal on Twitter, we recorded an episode just for fun at the weekend where we watched Skinwalker Ranch episode 1. So it's available. People have downloaded it. Feedback's been great. And it was just a kind of fun us sharing our thoughts on the series, the show, our little problems with it, but what we liked. Sure. You visited Skinwalker Ranch in 2019. And I think you alluded to it before, that you said ufology's taking you to riding in helicopters with multimillionaires. Mm. I'm guessing that was with Brandon Fugel.
Yep.
So what was it like? Tell us a little bit about your time in Skinwalker Ranch.
Sure. It was... Okay, first of all, I always kind of preface that Skinwalker Ranch is beautiful. It's idyllic in a way. If you're into sort of Midwestern scenery, it's a place that I would love to go camping in. It's a place that I would love to just hang out in overnight, like, you know, in the middle of the wilderness out there. So I'm going to say that it's beautiful and strange all at the same time. I didn't have any personal experiences. I know a lot of people have claimed to have experiences there. There's a lot of stories and mythology, obviously. I think what I found to be the most interesting is you have a team of individuals who are at Skinwalker Ranch, and they're purely interested in just finding out the truth, no matter what it is. You know, the show, I've only seen five episodes of it. I've not seen the last three or four episodes. But, you know, I don't want to speak to the show only because I'm not a big fan of sort of that style of content and that type of content. But so I find problems with it, even if it's fine. I just like the dramatic pauses. It's like, why this is not real life. So the people there, you know, from who I met and the people I met are very authentic. Like they are willing to say, listen, we don't know what's going on. It could be very prosaic, and that's great if we prove it is. Or it could not be prosaic, and it would be great if we could prove that it's not. They're just observing at this point. And I think that that's what we need to sort of understand about Skinwalker Ranch. There's a lot of conspiracy, and there's a lot of they're doing it for the money, or they're doing it for fame, or they're doing it for to sort of prove their own paranormal beliefs or whatever. And I don't think that's true. One, there's no money in it really for Brandon Fugel. Literally any money this show makes for him, he could like literally just do 1 minute worth of work and he would make that money. So I don't think that's part of it. I don't think that for him, it's some personal quest. I think he does have a bit of a sort of Don Quixote kind of wanting to find monsters, maybe a little bit. I think we all do. We all love a good mystery, and chasing monsters is definitely a fun aspect of life, especially if you can do that for a living. So maybe that's part of it. But I think he's at heart someone who loves he loves science. He loves to understand what's going on in the world around him, right? He wants answers to the natural or maybe the supernatural world. So, you know, he's doing it for reasons that are his own. But I think they're honest and I think they're genuine. I don't think there's some silly, you know, conspiracy around this. Skinwalker Ranch is that. It's a science lab. Let's put it that way. It's really difficult to get universities to engage at a place like that. You know, I know they've contacted several universities to come out and study the place, and the universities simply decline, simply because they don't want to be associated with Skinwalker Ranch and the mythology around it. You know, the same way I think that it was the University of Colorado, right, didn't want to be associated with Blue Book and the Condon Report. So they basically went out swinging, saying, we're just going to make this thing look dumb so that our university doesn't suffer. And you know, unfortunately, a lot of authentic methods or a lot of authentic steps have been taken to try and bring proper academic rigor and proper academic institutions to Skinwalker Ranch, all expenses paid, and they decline. Because again, association. So I think it's an honest attempt to try and understand what's going on. What unfortunately happens is because those honest attempts are met with, you know, we decline to participate. We're sort of left to other devices. Like what can we do now to try and get more public knowledge and awareness into this weird place that has these weird phenomena? Well, I think, you know, Brandon Fugel took the road that sort of a lot of us would take. They go to the media. Listen, if academic institutions don't want to do this, we'll do it another way. And you know, he's taken a lot of criticism, right? Mick West has been one of his most ardent critics about this. And you know, I'm not sure if it's totally fair, right? I think a lot of invitations have been made, and if people don't want to do it, they don't want to do it. There's not much else you can do. But he wants to know the truth, so he's going to figure it out the best way he can with the tools and resources he has available to him. And
can I just ask, because I had a question sent in
sure.
From Feuerboy on Twitter. What are your thoughts on the scientific efficacy of what's been of what's seen in the Curse of Skinwalker Ranch? So I had to check up efficacy as a word, which you'll probably know, and it's the ability to produce intended results for anyone who wasn't aware, because I wasn't. So from the setup you've seen, what are the chances that they're going to get the results, and whether that is proof of interdimensional beings or whether that's proof that it's prosaic, as you say, what kind sure. of chance do they have?
Yeah, I think the current setup at the ranch, the current hardware and software at the ranch, is not designed to test anything. So I think that's the first thing we need to understand is it's purely observational. So they're not there to test hypotheses, they're there to simply observe what's going on and collect as much data as they can. Unfortunately, when it comes to TV, that's really boring. Sitting and watching stuff and collecting data via observation is not necessarily exciting. So what I think the television show has done, and what I think History Channel and Prometheus Entertainment has sort of created, is this kind of false sense of what goes on there, in the sense that you have, I can't remember the guy's name. He's from Alabama.
Travis Taylor.
Thank you, Travis Taylor. You have Dr. Travis Taylor there kind of doing these tests. Right. And I think it makes for good television. This is sort of his bag. He's done it before in other TV shows. So I think we need to just sort of be pragmatic here and understand that the TV show serves one purpose. The actual monitoring on the ranch serves another. I'm sure I'm going to make Brandon Fugel upset, but you know, by everything I've said so far. But I think it's just, you know, we need to be understanding that media and television are different than sort of real life. Let's put it that way. That's all I can really say to answer that question, because I don't really know the rest of it. I also haven't seen the show enough to make a sort of a more expert comment here, because I've only seen a few episodes. Listen. The science being done, just to reiterate, is purely observational at this point. Whatever the TV show is doing, that's what they're doing. And obviously that's a question you have to ask to Brandon Fugel, or Travis Taylor, or the people at Prometheus. Like, I really personally don't know. I guess that's the best way I can answer your question. When I was there, it was purely an observational program and process. What's happened since, I don't know.
No, that's totally fair. I'm speaking with Thomas Winterton, who is the ranch superintendent, this Saturday about it. And again, we kind of voiced our opinions on the watch along, and I love the idea of the show. I love the mythology around Skinwalker Ranch. I love the possibilities that are out there. The first series is very, as you say, observational, sometimes a little bit forced, what they may or may not see. But I know Thomas Winterton, from a conversation he's had with one of the listeners, has basically said the first series has very much been, think of it as going to the doctor when you've got a bit of an issue, and they'll do some initial testing to kind of see, you know, what might be the cause. The second series is very much going into more detail, and that's where they're really hoping to ramp things up, which should be getting filmed just now. So, but as you quite rightly say, they are still filming a TV show. So if it was 3 months of nothing happening, you have to make it look like something's happening, and how much they push that is where it can kind of lose a particular type of viewer on the show. So yeah, no, that's totally fair. I had a question from the Signal, again from Dan. So he was asking, did you have any thoughts, or did you notice the triangular map that they had on the wall? And there were certain points that were correlated within it. I can see you smiling. Yeah. So, and he just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
What are you, do you know what the points are? Like, was he able to figure out what those locations were on the map?
So there was one of two things. So Dan's very artistic, as I found out recently, and he has created his own incredible three-dimensional map of the ranch itself and points where things have happened. I can't remember, though, if this was the map that had the points of the Bermuda Triangle, or I might be mixing up the unidentified that had a map on the wall with points that were basically unidentified. So you might know better than me.
The map on the wall at Skinwalker Ranch is a world map. So it's not a map of the ranch with triangulation. It's a map of the planet with 3 points. Because this is, I have to figure out how, if I'm going to violate anything when it comes to an article that I've been researching now for the last year. Listen, I have to be really cautious. So I've been doing sort of some research into some stuff that correlates to this. I just can't, because like I said, I don't want to throw myself under the bus.
Of course.
Let's just say that there have been other, it has nothing to do with the paranormal. I'm going to kind of be super clear here. So the three locations, okay, well, obviously one location is Skinwalker Ranch, but the other two locations, the incidents that occurred have nothing to do with the paranormal. They're just incidents of interest that similar sort of things have occurred, that people have experienced at Skinwalker Ranch. So that's all I'm going to kind of say, but I can't give away too much. I'm sure there's some internet sleuths out there that have figured it out. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to pretend it's some magical, mystical thing, or I've asked some secret knowledge, because I don't. It hits you in the face when I literally looked at the map and was like, oh, interesting. So I just kind of noted the locations, did a Google search. I was like, oh, that makes sense. So I kind of have gone down this road of research, but I can't talk about it. I want to, but I can't, because I'll throw myself under the bus.
Okay. No, totally fine. Totally
sorry.
Fine. That answer,
it's not paranormal.
Itself,
I'll say that. It's not paranormal.
See, this is where you have become one of the UFO people, that even giving an answer that tells us it's not paranormal and there's nothing interesting to see here is really interesting and intriguing and makes you think, yeah. But he knows more than he's letting on. Not that you are saying that, but yeah.
All right. Listen, I will admit to this. The reason why I'm not talking about it is because I want to sell an article and make money from it. So it's purely financial at this point, right? Like, I've been doing research that I've put time into something. It's been a work thing. And I want to profit from the time I've put in. Right. So, I have to be really cautious, because I could literally be just handing somebody money from my own wallet. And that's not something I want to do in this case, but I will sort of say it is not UFO related. Maybe that's kind of the best way to put it. It's not UFO or paranormal related. It just so happens that Skinwalker is kind of, they have the map up, I guess, but it's interesting. Yeah. God, I'm awful. Okay. Sorry. Okay.
Do you want that answer left in the podcast? I don't mind taking that out if you want me to take it out.
What, that I'm like still a hack journalist and I want to make money?
Yeah, no. I mean, like, just in general, that if you're saying you've done a bit of research, you don't want anyone, I'm happy to take that out if you want the whole question and answer, if you would rather
If you don't take it out, you have to leave this part in.
Yeah, so that's what I want to do, okay? I might only be seven episodes in, but I know what sounds good, so I would totally love to leave this in, but I'll leave it up to you. It'll totally make you look better.
No, this is an interesting, this is a good Brechtian conversation. You're literally asking a guest if you should take something out of your episode because listen, I'm doing it purely for financial reasons. I have no problem admitting. I've been researching an article now for a long time and I want to get paid for it. So no, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm still trying to put bread on my family's table. Obviously they show it in the show, so it's interesting and compelling to people, and people wonder what it is, and there's going to be obviously a lot of speculation how it's connected and etc. It's interesting. It'll make a good article, but again, it's an article I want to get paid for, so you can choose to keep it in or not. It doesn't bother me any.
Yeah, we'll keep it, and we'll leave this whole conversation about keeping it or not in as well, so people can see what actually happens sometimes on these things. So
See the underbelly of the podcast. I like it.
Oh, it totally is. This is why I do this for fun. If I've said to all my guests, if no one listened, this last 6 weeks has been crazy enough for me just to speak to people like yourself and have these amazing conversations. So I absolutely love it. I want to ask you a quick question on Skinwalker Ranch, and then I'm wary of time, and I want to do the quick fire round with you as well, because I think you've got maybe 5-10 minutes left. So Brandon Fugel said in your article that I suggest anyone goes and looks at, it was back in March of this year, that talked about your visit, and there's a lot of great quotes in there, a lot of great questions. Perhaps it's an intelligence from another reality or dimension. Again, I'm going to ask you, MJ, what do you think is happening on Skinwalker Ranch, if anything?
Oh, man. Again, right, it's tough. It falls down that sort of, again, speculative rabbit hole that do we really want to fall down because we don't have enough information. I've admitted before that I'm much more willing to, let's say, use the words believe, that the supernatural in some way is real. I'm not saying, you know, ghosts and stuff like that, but I think people do encounter mysterious things. I think people do have bizarre experiences that fall outside of the realm of, you know, quote unquote normal. And I'm not prepared currently to chalk it all up to delusion. You know, everyone's heard the story of the widow who wakes up, not the widow, that, well, she's still married. Well, I guess not. The widow who wakes up in the middle of the night and has the premonition that her husband, who was a bomber in the Second World War, got shot down over Nazi Germany and died. And she just suddenly knew, right? We all know the story of the soldiers who just get gut feelings that something bad's going to happen, and it does. We all know, this is an interesting one. We know that when snipers in the army and in the military are trained to be snipers, they don't bead the target until they're ready to pull the trigger, because oftentimes the target just feels something's up and they go to cover. Something weird is going on, right? There is, I think, something unknown happening in the world around us. I don't think everything in the universe can be explained through science. I think that there are mysteries and anomalies that exist that make, you know, life on this planet interesting. You know, like I said, I like I said previously, you know, I'm Catholic, so, you know, I have this fundamental belief that a dead Jewish carpenter came back to life. You know, so is it possible that something supernatural, let's say, or paranormal, quote unquote paranormal, is happening? All the baggage that word has, right? Something paranormal is happening on Skinwalker Ranch. Sure. You know, it's possible. I'm not prepared to say what it is because I don't know. And I don't want to speculate because I think, you know, belief is the enemy. But part of me wants to believe, part of me, because I'm probably also on my personal quest for vindication, and my personal quest for God. I think there is something interesting happening on Skinwalker Ranch. Do I think every single experience out there is paranormal? No, of course not, right? Even I was spooked at times out there when nothing happened, but I knew it was just my brain picking up on the mythology that I had collected and researched for the last 2 years on the place, sort of manifesting itself, right? You know, I'd be walking through the old homestead and it was dark, And I was afraid something was going to jump out at me. Nothing did. And I knew it was all in my imagination. So there's going to be those moments as well, right? There's going to be periods where people have experiences on that ranch that aren't necessarily sort of quote unquote real. But on the flip side, there's a lot of, you know, stories from that ranch that clearly indicate something weird is going on. So I'm going to sit there, I think, in my current opinion and my current belief, again, awful word, but my current belief is something odd is happening at Skinwalker Ranch. Something, let's say, anomalous. That's all I have at this point. So that's to answer your question, that's where I sit. Again, I could be proven wrong and I'm fine with that. I don't hinge my self-worth on my beliefs. So I'm happy to sit in supernatural is a maybe. Let's sit there.
I like it. That's the beauty of my position doing these podcasts, that I can sit here and just ask the questions about things I want to know, so I don't have to commit to an answer. But no, that's perfect. Listen, before you finish up, we'll move on to the quick fire. So I've got a few names, incidents, topics. You can say as little or as much as you want. And that's the kind of show finishing up. Okay. So you've been great to listen to, MJ, as well. So thank you very much. I'm sure people are going to love it. So the first one, you also wrote an article on this, would be the recent Maggi UFO incident in Brazil.
It was most likely just a prosaic series of drones and skydivers with pyrotechnics. I'm going to go with nothing interesting happened.
Fair enough. Linda Moulton Howe, again, someone you wrote about in one of your articles about selling the piece of potential wedged UFO for $35,000 to TTSA. Mm. So Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda's a wonderful, kind person. But I really struggle with some of the information she presents. I think as a journalist, I think she gives credence maybe to ideas that aren't necessarily legitimate, and I'm not sure why. So that's all I can say about that.
That's cool. Tom DeLong.
Interesting guy. I'd love to sit down and have a beer with him.
Me too.
Not too sure where his head at is all the time, but I give him all the props in the world for finding guys like Luis Elizondo and Chris Mellon and assembling that. So for all the people that sort of hate on him, I would sort of say they should be able to, you know, do better. But I don't necessarily agree with everything he says or believes in. But that's okay. I don't have to agree with you.
No, it could be right. It could be wrong. Yeah. So the next one is All the Strange and the recent virtual expo.
Oh, that was fun. I will be totally honest. I watched Micah Hanks's and I watched mine, and then I had to be a dad, so I was unable to kind of finish it. I know Jason's slowly releasing them online, so I'm going to kind of consume them all. But I was only able to kind of be free for the morning, and then my 2-year-old and my 4-year-old were suddenly like crawling on me, so I had to go deal with them. So it was a fun time. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a cool idea.
It was, and I just wanted to get that in there because I had some issues logging in on the morning, and then with it being UK time and whatnot, like yourself, I'm kind of going back and watching them as they come out. So
yeah,
MJ's is awesome. Definitely recommend watching that, and then make sure you go in, and maybe that's the future of expos. It'd be great to get together again one day, but while we can't do that kind of thing, this was definitely something new, and it was a good, I like that someone's tried a new type of medium for an expo, and I think it was a really good, cool idea. Three more things, MJ. Tic Tac or UFO UAP? So the Tic Tac UFO UAP.
I feel that the Nimitz case is really compelling for a UFO case. I think that here, like everything ufological, right? The Tic Tac has kind of taken on its own mythology. So it's like Roswell, right? Something happened at Roswell. Unfortunately, everything we have information on in regards to Roswell's is like mythological now, and we just can't figure out what it actually was. which is why I don't study Roswell. But I think the Tic Tac is kind of that. It's this curious. We're watching mythology occur in real time here. We're watching this kind of lore and legend build around this curious little incident. So I think the Tic Tac UFO concept, I think it's compelling. I think the incidents around it are compelling. I think that we're also going to see, though, this mythological framework built around it to include a whole host of weird explanations that will sometimes make sense and often not make sense. So yeah, mythology and reality merging right now as we speak.
I like that. And the last one, and this is very much what this means to you, I like to ask all the guests this to finish off. Disclosure.
God. Yeah, just my favorite word in the UFO lexicon. What are we disclosing? Can I caveat the question with what exactly is being disclosed? Or is it just, no, I'd have to just answer. Okay. Disclosure that, as I said before, disclosure that strange things make incursions into American airspace and land or sea area. I'll restate. We're finally having more, let's say, transparency that objects make incursions into territory that is the United States of America and potentially other countries as well. What we don't have, and I don't think what we are going to have, is disclosure that, you know, the United States government has been colluding with aliens or interdimensional beings or time traveling humans. I don't think we're going to get that anytime ever. So when we talk about the disclosure movement or the disclosure community or whatever, I want to burst the bubble of people that think that, you know, yep, the United States has a handshake arrangement with the aliens and they're visiting us and they're walking among us and they're abducting us in exchange for technology and reverse engineered ships and all that stuff. Or that there's flying saucers in a bunker somewhere that weren't made here. I'm going to say that is not true. And that's just part of the UFO mythos. But disclosure that the United States has an active research program into unidentified aerial phenomena, disclosure that, you know, they don't know what's going on in the skies all the time. Definitely the case.
Awesome. But MJ, it's been great talking to you. You can follow MJ on Twitter at MJ Benias. Please go back and read his articles. There's some great ones on Vice as well. Give those a click, especially when the ones come out that are going to make him some more cash. Make sure you go and read those. His book, The UFO People, A Curious Culture, is available on Amazon. Again, go out and buy that this weekend. It's a great read. When we're all locked down, furloughed, and very much stuck indoors due to whatever's going on outside your own homes, why not pick that up and give it a read? It's been great chatting to you, MJ. Anything you want to kind of say to the listeners before you head off?
No, I just want to say thanks very much for having me on. I really appreciate your time, and this has been a lot of fun. So thank you very much.
That was all we had time for. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with MJ Benias as much as I did. I could have talked even longer. MJ, it was really, really good with his time, folks, and that's someone who we will definitely have back in the future, particularly when we find out what that special article is that MJ is releasing soon. Remember to like, review, and subscribe. I know time is precious right now for everyone. If you do have a minute to log on to iTunes, Podcast Addict, or whichever platform you subscribe, please, please, please consider leaving a review of the show. It's always appreciated and really helps with the algorithms to get the show bumped up in those rankings so more and more people can hear. And remember, you can follow the show on Facebook at That UFO Podcast. Follow on Twitter, which is the main platform I use, at UFO UAPAM. And it's great conversing with everyone on there. Had some great conversations. It's been lovely speaking with everyone. And again, as I say, support the show via patreon.com. Just search for That UFO Podcast. There'll be a lot more exclusives and bonus content on there as well. But folks, as always, your listens are the most appreciated thing. The show is going from strength to strength. It's something I love doing. And as long as people are listening, I'll keep creating content. Again, thank you so much, folks. As always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.